Steve, are you there?
I am indeed. Hi.
Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good.
Steve's book is Bad Stories: What the Hell Just Happened to Our Country. What the hell just happened to our country? What is the purpose of that title, and what's sort of the elevator summary of your book, Steve?
Well, the purpose of the book, I think, was to try to explain just that question, like how did we get to this moment where, you know, I have three little kids, so I'm trying to explain to them, and this is, in a certain way, having little kids is very clarifying because they're not super sophisticated as thinkers, but they're highly absorbent. They kind of get what mean is. So, you know, I think like a lot of Americans, I was in a state of just confusion and sorrow, and over that was a lot of anger and sort of grievance about our political circumstance and all the discord. You know, and how a candidate, you know, regardless of what you think of people's ideology and their policies and so forth, you know, I would like to have the leader of the country be somebody with whom I would feel safe having them on a playground, not somebody who, you know, boasts about sexually assaulting women or incites violence at his rallies or is casually bigoted against African Americans, people of color, or mocks disabled people, stuff that just feels like it's beneath the decency of people of good faith and conscience. And I don't mean that ideologically or in a partisan way. I just mean, I think it's deeply sad and disappointing that is the standard bearer for the GOP and the person who was, you know, elected by the Electoral College. So I was trying to explain, how did we reach this point in American history? And a lot of that is about sort of getting your head out of the news cycle and the kind of the rush of all the bad outcomes. You guys just did a story on the break about how they're, you know, tearing families apart at the border. And this, if you really step back from history, you have to realize, you know, people are a storytelling species, and the reason that you get bad outcomes politically or morally or otherwise is mm-hmm. because of bad stories that people tell themselves.
Well, what is the definition of a bad story?
A story that is fraudulent, a story that is propagandistic, a story that's intended to sow discord rather than to encourage people to be empathic.
Okay, so what's an example of that? What is a bad story?
Race is the best example I can give you. Race is a bad story. That is, it is a story that was created that there's some kind of invisible pigmentary alliance. And it was created, John, as you know, before America was even a country. It was a way for wealthy landed white people to essentially kind of shift the target for indentured white people or, you know, poor white people away from the people with the money and power and towards some other group of people of color against whom they were suddenly pitted because there was some imaginary idea that the color of your skin puts you in alliance with other people of that skin color. And that was very overt at the time of the country's founding, right? We had African Americans who were property, right? All men created equal was kind of a bad story in the sense that it was fraudulent. All men weren't created equal. In fact, women couldn't vote. Slaves couldn't vote. It was really just landed white men who could vote in when the country was founded.
But is the bad story that because of the color of your skin, you're less human, you aren't physiologically or mentally comparable to people of other skin color?
That's part of it. Certainly, when you hear somebody say talk about people of color in a way that conveys that they are subhuman or less than human or less intelligent or more savage or ... That's certainly part of it. But it's also the idea that there is something called race, that people with a pigmentary alliance are somehow in alliance with one another against people with a different pigmentation. If you just step back from that story, who says so? People with a vested interest in saying so. Another bad story that's kind of foundational, since you're asking, and the book is organized, as you know, into a series of bad stories, the idea that America is a representative democracy. You know, that wasn't true at the founding of the country, and it's still not true. It's something that is something we would like to be true, and I wish it was true, but one person doesn't have one vote in this country. Votes count all differently based on what state you're in. There's a large portion of the population that's disenfranchised, and there's also a significant portion of the population, and this may be the most dire thing that Americans face, who simply don't exercise their franchise. They've lost faith in the idea that their vote matters in the system. Everybody, whether you're Republican or Democrat, liberal, conservative, whatever it is, we should all be concerned about the fact that
We should all be concerned that what?
that 104 million people didn't exercise their franchise.
Think about this. You point this out in the book that, what was it, 42% of people who could vote didn't. I think that's the number.
Right.
And of those 42%, obviously, of the 58% that voted, 58% in this election voted. Of that 58%, obviously less than half cast ballots for the president. But he won. That's the system. Donald Trump knew how the game is played. I'm hearing what you're saying.
Well, John, step back from what you just said. That is the system. But what if you were here at the country's founding, or 100 years after the country's founding, and somebody said to you, don't you think women should be allowed to vote? Or don't you think African Americans should be allowed to vote? If you answered, well, that's just the system, people would look at you understandably and say, are you crazy? That's completely unfair.
Right.
A system that's rigged in the ultimate way that our system is rigged. It's rigged by wealth, I think. It's rigged to some extent by race. And, you know, this applies to the criminal justice system and all kinds of different, you know, equality of opportunity is the founding good story that America, you know, sort of tells ourselves that we were founded on.
I understand that, Steve, but I didn't read your book with the prescription coming out of it that said, okay, here's how we fix that. Here's how we enfranchise more voters or get more sane voters, if that's the way you want to look at it. I saw you as simply pointing out, here's what happened. That's the title of your book, Bad Stories, What the Hell Just Happened to Our Country. And I think that in itself is kind of a wake-up call. I worried in reading the book that it might work a little echoey. That are independents, are conservatives, are Republicans going to look at this and go, wow, the guy's got a point there?
I don't know, but the truth is that I don't believe in bad people, and I hope this came through in the book. I believe that people fall under the sway of bad stories. So, you know, the day after the election, I was, you know, in Florida, and I was hanging out, you know, with my son in a swimming pool, and I walked by this young guy, and he had a little daughter, like the age of my daughter, who was eating potato chips, and as I walked by, this guy said, you know, oh, honey, we're about to have dinner, don't eat any more chips, and of course, the little girl, anybody who has kids knows how this story goes, immediately started eating chips even more quickly, and I laughed, and I sort of said, good luck with that. It was this moment of real bonding, like, hey, we're both dads, we're both kind of at the mercy of our daughters. And a few minutes later, my son pointed, you know, came up next to me in the shallow end of the pool and pointed to this guy and said, look, Papa, look what that man's wearing. He was wearing a Make America Great Again hat. I think my son expected me to express indignation or anger at this guy or something like that. But the truth is, John, I have no idea what led that guy to put on that hat. I have no idea what stories it is that he listens to that made him believe this guy's going to be a good leader or he's the right leader for me. All I know is that he's a dad like me on vacation. He's a fellow citizen. He's just as much a citizen as I am. And the question really that the book asks is not are these people good or bad, but what stories do we tell ourselves that convince us that this or that kind of political actor is going to be good for the country? And if we fall under the sway of bad stories, we're going to wind up with bad outcomes.
And do you think Donald Trump got elected because of bad stories? Because of information that is wrong and was manipulative that way?
Well, I do. But I also feel like that's not just the responsibility of one party or one set of people. This is a democracy. And if we have an electoral outcome that results in somebody who I feel is deeply corrupt and self-interested and is not trying to protect people beyond just the constituency that voted for him, that's a result that I have part of me, I'm partly responsible for that. It's not the sort of book that says that evil or bad intention or bad stories is just located out there on the other side. I think that's a dodge. I think, as we were saying earlier, we should all be anguished at the idea that the United States ranks 35th in voter participation, you know, behind Turkey, behind Greece. We should ask, why is it that we have made it difficult to vote? Why have we discouraged our citizens from voting? And in whose interest is it to have a lower turnout? And, you know, the answer to these questions is not especially difficult to discern. The central thing that I believe government is supposed to do is to try to protect the people, by which I mean especially vulnerable communities, from a kind of corrupt alliance between big business and government. And that applies to the gun control debate, that applies to how taxes are levied in this country, and the great eras in this country, like after World War II, the great post-war boom. I'm sure you know this, John. Yeah, the tax rate on the highest earners under Eisenhower was 90%. Yeah. Under Kennedy, it was 75%. You know, when people suggest that we take maybe one yacht from a person who has 100 yachts so that a bunch of kids can go to college, I think that's a beautiful thing. That's good for everybody involved. So I do think that, in a sense, greed is one of the central bad stories, and people leverage greed. I think particular demagogues and political actors are able to pursue greedy ends by exalting people's grievances and getting them to ignore their vulnerability.
Exalting people's grievances. What do you mean by that?
I mean, for instance, that one of the ways that you can get people to ignore, for instance, that they might need better health care coverage, that they need some help from the government to make sure that they have a medical emergency, they're not going to go bankrupt. One of the ways that you distract somebody from that vulnerability, which is very humiliating to people, is to say to them, you know what's really important? Keeping immigrants from infiltrating your community. You know what's really important? Keeping those thugs from cities like Chicago out of your neighborhoods and making sure that Sharia law...
So you're telling these people that voted for Trump that they're not smart enough, that they've been played?
Nope. What I'm telling them is that they have had their grievances exalted, and as a result of that, they've ignored the ways in which government is intended, really, to try to help them. I'm not into calling people suckers or da-da-da-da. Everybody gets their own set of stories, but I do think it's dangerous to not examine what those stories are and to not recognize that if you don't look at whether your stories are good stories or not, you're going to wind up with bad stories, and they're going to result in bad outcomes.
Is the biggest bad story of the last election that Hillary Clinton's email server was a necessary factor in the election?
I don't know about, you know, biggest or smallest. Again, I think if you just step back from history a bit, the most disturbing thing is that the person who won the election was civic apathy. In other words, you know, Trump got 25%, Hillary got 26%, the independents got a few percent, and not voting got, you know, whatever it was, 42% of the vote. I think that should be the big thing that signals that our democracy is sick, that somebody can get 25% of the eligible voters and be bestowed 100% of the power.
I understand that, and I don't think anybody's going to disagree with you that, no matter who they voted for. 42% is an appalling number, but I'm sorry, I didn't vote for Donald Trump, and as I watch his presidency unfold, I am appalled and amazed and disappointed in what I am seeing, and somebody needs to explain that to me. I still don't understand how even a fourth of my fellow citizens look at Donald Trump, his actions, his manner, the whole picture, and say, that's my guy. I must have had my head in the sand.
Well, I'll tell you, Bad Stories does attempt to explain why it is that Hillary Clinton in particular was really, I want to say this carefully, I don't think she was a fantastic candidate in the sense of being charismatic and so forth. I was distressed by her voting for the Iraq War, her buck-raking speeches, you know. If it was purely on policy, I was probably for somebody who was more redistributive in their outlook, like Bernie Sanders, who essentially said, look, we should take better care of equality of opportunity and those who are vulnerable in our communities. But I do think that Hillary Clinton, for the past 35 or 40 years, has really been victimized by a kind of constant scandal set of accusations. I say in the book, it's as if they put a smoke machine, you know, a smoke detector in you know, wherever she goes, there's sort of a machine that produces smoke. And as soon as it does, the sirens come and there's a new scandal, regardless of whether there's anything really to it or not. And, you know, email coverage, the coverage of this email thing was about 11% of the coverage overall. And the coverage of policy, by which I mean economic policy, environmental policy, policy, all of it, was 10%. We should all take a long look at those numbers and say, was some bureaucratic bungling about her email really more important than every other policy discussion? Elections are supposed to be a contest of ideas.
Particularly since, as you point out, okay, and then we saw all of the email, and if you think she was really hiding something fantastic, what was it? And there was nothing there. To this day, you'd think if there was something, am I misrepresenting what you were pointing out?
We would have had something,
and we don't.
Yeah, I think it was a nothing burger, and I think the treatment of all of her scandals, I mean, this is the thing. I would talk with people, and they would say, oh, she's corrupt, oh, emails, Benghazi. It was kind of like it was just enough to say a single word, and the stain would be on her. And I think it was something that people used, frankly, who, for whatever set of reasons, mostly unexamined, bad stories that live within people, just couldn't stand voting for a woman or that woman or a Democrat or a liberal or whatever it was. So they constructed a story in which she was, you know, somehow mixed up in conspiracies, she was in cahoots with Russia, you know, whatever it was. I don't think there was much to any of it, but that's not really, when you're a political actor and you're trying to seize power, it's actually useful to be shameless. It's actually useful politically to not worry about what the facts are and worry instead about whether you can gin up a kind of concern and a kind of paranoid set of conspiracies against somebody. And I just feel that the right wing of this country, and especially the right wing media, that's their entire agenda. There's no effort at epistemology. They're not interested in trying to present stories that might make us understand why we have civic dysfunction. They're simply interested day after day in kind of creating a counter narrative in which the Republican candidate, no matter who it is always the victim, and the Democratic candidate, no matter who it is always the perpetrator. And, you know, basically what matters more than anything else in the whole world is white people and white people's feelings. It matters more than people of color, certainly. It matters more than the abrogation of people's rights. And I say that, you know, not because I think it's a great circumstance or not to be provocative, but I simply think if you really objectively look at what the Sean Hannitys and Rush Limbaughs of the world are doing, that is their entire purpose. They never say, hey, Barack Obama was trying to do something good. Hey, Hillary Clinton has some good idea.
Right.
Never any consideration of that. It's completely predicated on simply attack, 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 conspiracy, conspiracy, conspiracy. And when they fall apart, it doesn't matter. They just move on to the next one. Oh, they didn't wiretap the phones. Okay, we'll move on to Spygate. Oh, Spygate fell apart. Okay, we'll move on to Robert
Mueller. You point out late in the book. I'm looking at page 74. After the election, 48% of Trump supporters believed Obama was born in Kenya. After the election, millions of illegal votes were cast in the election. 38% of Trump supporters believe that millions of illegal votes were cast in the election. No evidence to that. 53% believed that the leaked email from Clinton staffers contained code words for pedophilia, human trafficking, and satanic ritual abuse. 53% of Trump supporters believe that. I'm out of time. It's this and more, so much more, in actually a relatively short read for all of the heft. It's Steve Allman's Bad Stories, What the Hell Just Happened to Our Country. Next time you come through Chicago, I hope you can join us in the studio, Steve. I appreciate your time today.
Sure, that'd be great.